Bobby and Elliot, 2024 round two in the series of Cannabis Insider. We are back. Please make sure you tune into the most recent episode with Abby Higginbotham and Pato Little. They had a phenomenal conversation with a Bloomberg analyst. I think it premiered on Thursday, February 1st. Sure. So make sure to check our posts, head to Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, because they are powering out some phenomenal content on this show and on this channel. Javi, hi.
Hey, you know what I'm thinking? We have pretty cool surnames like Hayes and Lane or Hasse, of course, but like people like to say Hayes just because it's cannabis related. Hayes. But Higginbotham and Little,
it gives me like Tolkien vibes.
Yeah,
like, Higginbotham is like a hobbit name. I think Little probably as well. Come on, man.
It's like a
I'm not calling her a hobbit. I'm saying the names give me Tolkien.
I was thinking more like Lady Higginbotham and Mr. Little.
I think we're kind of on the same wavelength here. I think we're still on the same wavelength. I hope Abby watches this one and has a comment on it for us. But I agree. Lane and Hayes. There's a good cannabis company in there.
Mm-hmm.
Lane and Hayes. All right, Javi. We have an exciting interview today, brother. We are bringing on one of the data OGs in cannabis, a phenomenal perspective on brand trends, on what retailers deal with, brands are dealing with, shelf space. I mean, could probably chat just for hours with this gent, but really excited to welcome Cy Scott, CEO and founder of Headset Data. Been around forever. Everybody knows him in cannabis. But Javi, anything to set the groundwork before we bring Cy over?
Yeah, man. You know what's up. You know what's coming up. Two Benzinga events. The Benzinga Cannabis Market Spotlight coming to California. We're coming to Los Angeles.
Woo! LA, baby!
LA. CannabisMarketSpotlight.com for more information. And, of course, our landmark, our tentpole event, the first of two this year, the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, 18th edition, coming back to Florida. In a new venue, the Diplomat in Hollywood, Florida, right next to Miami. Fantastic spot, amazing speakers, and renewed format for our panels and our content.
Guess who we just secured today? Well, this will be later on when people listen. We just secured the Honorable Ed Perlmutter to join us again. And we just secured the Honorable Cory Gardner.
Nice.
Two former U.S. Congress people going to be joining us to chat, because I'm sure we'll have to talk about legislatively by then, and I'm excited to add more to that conversation too.
And they're fun too, right?
Nice guys.
They're not square. They're not like all.
They're
stiff.
Not square. He says.
So fun to listen to.
All right, Javi. Let's get to the man of the hour. Always love you, brother. Always love jumping on here. But Cy Scott, Headset CEO and founder. Let's bring him on over. Welcome in, my friend Cy. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Dude, this isn't your first time with us, right?
It is my first time here.
Evidently,
I've done a lot.
First time doing a podcast. You got us beat on camera, microphone, everything. Look at that setup.
I know you look
good. Yeah. You know, in addition to Headset, I host a podcast as well, The High Rise with Emily Paxia, who you guys know very well, does a lot with Benzinga. So, you know, gotten pretty decent at it. It doesn't take that much, right? You invest in a good microphone, invest in headphones.
What brand do you use?
This is a Shure MV7, which is like, honestly, like a super reasonable mic, a couple $100. And it sounds great. Makes me sound way better than I do in person.
I know. You got that smooth baritone going on right now.
That's right.
I'm going to check it out because I got this one and it's
I have the same one. I got the Blue Yeti. I gave in to the brand.
It doesn't work for me.
I don't mind mine. You know, I feel like it's just when I get really loud, I get crackly. Anyways, this isn't a podcast about podcasting. but Cy, welcome on, man. I'm shocked we haven't had you on. But Headset, very well known in the space. I think let's jump some of the pleasantries a bit with, you know, you do data, right?
That's right.
You know, you are one of the data providers when it comes to brands in this space and how they are working within the cannabis supply chain ecosystem and reaching the consumer. So let's chat about 2023, right? Let's just jump right in. I want to know from your business, and I think we can take this from two perspectives, your business and then what your business saw in 2023. Let's start with the first of 2023. How was it for data, you know, performing in the space? You know, how did it, you know, affect you all being in kind of a tough market as we moved into the new year?
Yeah. And just to give, you know, those handful of listeners, I'm sure that aren't aware of Headset, a little bit of background on where we're coming from and where the data is coming from and the data that Elliot's asking about. Headset sources our data from retail cooperators. So cannabis adult use retailers, medical dispensaries. We work with about 3,500 stores right now and adding more, you know, every week. And we connect to those retailers via their point of sale. So we get a really rich lens, a great view into like what's going on. So we see these transactions, we see like how people are purchasing products together, we see demographics of like who these consumers are. We aggregate that up and we were able to provide a lot of market intelligence to our customers. And that's where we're coming from. You know, for retailers, the exchange is, you know, we give them a lot of analytics on their own data, so on their own business intelligence, so that they can perform better. And I think that's the narrative for 2023 in a big way. As probably many know that are in the space, it was a tough year on a lot of operators. I think, you know, in just macro, you know, outside of cannabis, I think it was tough for a lot of organizations. A lot of that had to do with, you know, inflation, you know, these interest rates going up, you know, venture kind of pulling back. And, you know, that's impacted, you know, broad categories, but it seems to have really impacted our category as well. Mm-hmm. So you have some of those challenges, you know, that really hit a lot of operators. And I know you guys talk to a lot of operators, and a lot of their narrative has been, you know, right sizing, cost cutting, you know, this year, kind of, you know, slowing down on expansion plans. And we see that, you know, we see all of that stuff happening. The markets as well, like it's been. It was a tight year for a lot of what we consider to be legacy markets. So markets like California, Colorado, Washington, you know, these markets that have been around for a number of years are seeing negative growth in 2023. So they're down when you look just year over year, or if you compare, you know, January sales of this year to January sales of last year, everything's down. A little bit, with some exceptions, right? There are exceptions with these emerging markets that are newer, you know, market like New York, right? That's just going to be a growth story for months and months and months, you know, maybe years plus, right? You know, we see that happening, obviously, markets like Ohio this year as the adult use stuff rolls out. So to say like markets are contracting, you know, it's kind of generalizing. And that's the hard thing about cannabis is every state, every province is different. You know, different framework, different operators, you know, different structures, you know, different levels of maturity as far as how long they've been around. There's all sorts of nuance. So it's really hard to just say, you know, this is where we're at. Because I think the stories are at a state by state level. But when you look at the states that you know, you really think about, states like California that have kind of the scale that they do, you know, they've been down a little bit year over year. You know, California year over year, about, you know, 12%, right, in total top line sales. And a lot of this has been driven by, you know, pricing. You know, pricing has come down, you know, like an incredible metric, well, story of growth is Michigan. Michigan, mm-hmm. You know, continues to grow, which is, it's frankly like quite incredible. You know, how Michigan continues to
perform. They hit the 3 billion mark, billion in cannabis sales, right?
And when you look at like a per capita basis, so basically like how many people live in Michigan versus how much cannabis is sold, it's way like out of bounds compared to other markets. And I, you know, some of this has to do with, you know, where they're situated, right? They're surrounded by some markets that still don't have legal cannabis, like Indiana, right? So that's, you know, potentially driving some of it. You know, pricing is low there too, right? And so that's driving it. But on a unit count, when we look at January, you know, Michigan is moving more units than the entire state of California. I mean, that's insane, right?
That's crazy. I did not expect to hear that. Wow.
Is it neighboring states? What is driving that?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, it's probably a big piece of it, right? I mean, you know, there's certainly, you know, people in Michigan aren't so different than people in California. So I can't imagine that they're just consuming more, that they just like cannabis more. But I think the price, helps. So when people are shopping, they're buying more than maybe someone in California. And then you have the states that are around them, that are still illicit. So, should Indiana legalize, maybe that'll impact the market. But a lot of it is pricing driven.
Go ahead, Avi.
Yeah, why is pricing so low in Michigan, right? It's one of those things. I was there in September in Detroit with some friends from Ohio, and they were like, dude, I need to take advantage of this. I'm going to smoke as much weed as I humanly can while I'm here.
Not going to OD. Like,
I'm good. I will still smoke as much as I want to. But like, what is it that makes pricing so attractive? And at the same time, how are companies still thriving in a low pricing environment?
Yeah, I think, it's a few factors that drive pricing. I mean, the common ones like, scale, pricing is driven by competition as well. There are a lot of doors in Michigan when you compare, to market like California on a per capita basis. There's just more doors that are available. So that's more competitive. So it's forcing retailers to drive, prices down to bring people in the door. More fragmentation. We see that happen in like markets like Washington, Oregon, where you have a lot of operators, a lot of brands that are producing products, and that just goes to competition. So I think that's another big driver of it. People are just trying to get foot traffic, get people in the doors, yeah. Right? And then once they're in the door, hopefully keep those customers. So discounting. When we look at our average item price, post discount, pre-tax. So, discounting does impact that, as well. And so it's all like mixed in there, but, the general narrative is like pricing is going down in every market. Some markets are kind of stabilizing, like California seems to be kind of skimming the bottom of like where they're at. That could change, right? As more jurisdictions legalize cannabis, California, I feel like, has this artificial limitation because there's not enough stores for the amount of people in California, and a lot of like kind of dry counties, so to speak, right, where you can't even find a store. That could change, right? If these counties, these cities, kind of get out of their own way and open up locations, that may drive more competition, more pricing. But we are seeing some price stabilization in markets like California, more or less. I mean, it's just not as steep as it was, but others continue to be quite steep. And you have markets like New York, average item price is like twice what a market like California is, or a market like Washington is. It's like way up there, but that's again because it's new. There's like 40 stores, right, that are open, that are legal. There's like thousands of illicit, but for the legal market, right, there's not that many, so pricing is high and consumers are paying. But as those stores open up, inevitably pricing will drop.
Can I ask, is there a correlation perhaps between the new, maybe not new, but something that's definitely talked about more over the last 6 months, is the amount of THC in products, right? Is there a correlation between, markets that may allow higher potency, and less basket size, perhaps?
Yeah, that's a good question. Unfortunately, in our data, we don't get potency coming back from the point of sale.
It's a hard one to track, I would imagine.
That's the truth, right? That's the thing with potency, is like every batch is different, right? Every batch is tested differently. So when you go to buy a certain strain from a certain operator at a certain location, you may go back a week later and it may be different, maybe tested, maybe a little lighter, a little heavier. So it's really hard to get good information. I remember in Canada when they first legalized, the OCS, which is the Ontario Cannabis Store, which is the provincial owned entity, they reported THC for the products, for the strains, and it was like 10 to 30%. It's just like this wild, it's like a pointless metric. You're like, you don't even know what you're getting.
I don't think they consume. I'm just gonna go ahead and put that out there.
Yeah, it's the difference between being chill and having a panic attack for me.
Totally. It's like, wait, yeah, it's like, why even bother publishing this? But I think, anecdotally, it seems that, high potency products, low price products are the things that that move. I mean, we can see on a pricing basis, people like inexpensive cannabis, right? From a volume perspective, I think it's like a reasonable analogy is like beer, right? There's like people that really are into beer and will buy expensive craft beer, right? Yeah, exactly, right? And same thing with weed, right? There's people that are into it and they'll pay a premium for like the best stuff, right? And then there's just like the average consumer who just like wants, you know, cheap and decent and is happy with that, right? And I think in alcohol, you know, that exists, you know, that's someone drinking a Budweiser or you know, a seltzer or something, right? Like they just something cheap. So there is that parallel. So I think, you know, the volume is still going to, you know, inexpensive things. And then just kind of, yeah, anecdotally again, because we don't have that data coming out of the point of sale, good testing data. It seems to be, you know, potency is a big driver.
Do you have data that can give you maybe a perspective on new consumers, given, you know, what they're buying, what segments they're buying into, things of that nature? It might be a little too specific and hard to track who's actually new, but I'm curious if that data can support how these companies are actually communicating with new consumers.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, we certainly have it. We see, you know, the consumer, associated with the transaction. And it's like, I think hundreds of millions of records. It's crazy. We've got like $50 billion of transactions in our data set, right? I mean, it's a massive, massive amount, right? That we have visibility into. So, you know, millions of consumers, you know, with that consumer information out of the box, when you subscribe to Headset, you get demographic, you get gender, and you get generation. So like millennial, females and so on. And then you can break that down into like different categories. We don't provide like that kind of real granular read out of the box. But certainly we have that information because we can see, you know, when someone with, you know, goes into a store for the first time, and maybe they're the first time they've ever showed up in our data set, regardless of store, you know, you could argue, well, maybe they went to a store that doesn't work with Headset, which could very well happen, but also they might be a brand new consumer coming in. And we can kind of look for those patterns. We just haven't really done that analysis, but that's interesting. I would maybe say like, I don't know if the brands are there yet, like where they're thinking that deeply about it. They should be, right? They absolutely should be thinking about, you know, how does my brand resonate with new consumers? Because if you can get a new consumer, like that consumer is going to be loyal for a long time, right? Oh, yeah. If they have a good first experience with your brand, like they're in. And so it's certainly something that these organizations should be thinking about. I don't know. I can ask my team. I haven't heard anybody, you know, that request like, hey, we're trying to understand our, you know, new consumers versus existing consumers, but they should totally be thinking about it.
You know, I have one question about, you know, product to close it up, but I have like a bridge question before that. And it's related to what you were just discussing about quality. And there's this kind of mantra that a lot of people in cannabis now love to use. And it's, you know, good weed ain't cheap and cheap weed ain't good. True, false, or none of the above?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it can be true. I think it can be true, certainly. But I think it can be false as well. Like in New York, you know, when you're talking these like insane average item price for an eighth, like that can't all be good weed, right? I mean, you know, a lot of it is like market demand. It's like the price is high, the weed is bad. I know, you know, that's kind of a narrative in Canada for a long time, right? With these big, big operators, like people that were connoisseurs were like, this is not good stuff and I'm paying a premium for it. So I think it can be true, but I think, you know, on the other side, you can find like really good stuff for pretty inexpensive, rates. And like I'm in Seattle, the Washington market is one of the cheapest markets when it comes to like average item price. We get taxed to oblivion here, but like you still walk out the door. It's pretty good. And you can get some good stuff for cheap for sure. So I would say it can be true, can be false to like give you a good non-answer there, but it's like everything. It's really hard to generalize in cannabis.
We got one more minute and I want to dive into the rise of pre-rolls, right? Because many times we discussed, yeah, I know the future is in beverages. And I agree the future is in beverages maybe 15 years from now. And then people said, oh, vapes. Yeah, they're discreet, whatever. They're sneaky. You can sneak a little vape in the movie theater or whatever. But you know, I think that people still love to smoke a joint It's just that most people can't or don't want to roll. Can you give us a little bit of a sense of the rise of pre-rolls and the emergence of these infused pre-rolls as a value proposition where it's like maybe you pay $15 or $20 for a pre-roll, but you get a S load of THC. I don't know.
No swearing on this child's podcast. Beverages, super small. I'm with you. We're looking at some beverage data for January, and it is like a per at its best as far as percentage of sales in a market like California that I was looking at. January was the best percentage of sales, but doesn't mean like, I mean, we're talking like 4% of units, so pretty small amount. It's got a long way to go. A vapor pen actually is a huge category right now. And it's like when you look at the demographics, Gen Z, they're buying more vape than flower. And that's like the first time where vape has a higher percentage of sales than flower. But to your question on pre-rolls. Yeah. So pre-rolls, historically move the most units because they're the cheapest, right? You can go get a single pre-roll for cheap. But the story in pre-rolls now is definitely infused. So the infused pre-rolls are a premium pre-roll, dipped in wax, what have you. And that is a whole new thing, right? And that seems to be really driving the category in a big way. So all the growth in pre-rolls from like a dollar perspective is definitely coming from the infused pre-rolls. So you're starting to see average item price go up. You're starting to see the contribution on the total market from dollars coming from pre-roll growing. It's not because, I mean, people are buying more and more pre-rolls, all of that, but it's really coming from these infused pre-rolls, which are significantly more expensive because you're getting that, S ton of THC.
Don't lie, Si. You got some of those in your desk drawer right there.
That's right. I have this right podcast finished. It's Friday after all.
It is. Well, Si, this has been informative, man. We got to do this again. I'm shooketh that this is your first time on our show. Will not be the last, my friend. But I appreciate your time.
Thank you for joining us. No spoilers.
Oh, well, no spoilers. I don't know what Javi just said, but no spoilers. But Si, thank you for joining us, my brother. We'll talk to you soon, man. We'll see you hopefully at some of our events coming up. February 22nd, California Market Spotlight. We got the Florida Cannabis Capital Conference in April. Be in New York in early spring. It's going to be a fun year. We look forward to being with Headset along the way, my friend. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. See you there.
All right, y'all. That is it for Cannabis Insider today. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions, reach out to Elliot Lane at Benzinga.com, Cannabis Hour at Benzinga.com. You guys remember when it was called Cannabis Hour? A few years back. Javi, we're old. We're geezers.
We are.
Yeah.
Here's my plug. And I'm going to do something that I shouldn't, but here it is. BCCannabis.com. Come join us in Florida. That is my final plug. We'll see you next time. Don't forget, how do we close?
Peace.